going to move now into a time of reflection and meditation and prayer this Easter morning. Finding a place of stillness and centeredness in your being, I invite you to breathe deeply. Bring into your awareness all that is with you this day. Perhaps you're bringing with you this day memories you have of Easter's gone by, childhood Easter celebrations, family members, some of whom may no longer be living. Perhaps this day has other associations for you. Perhaps you find your thoughts this morning centered on what it is about the Easter story that is both troubling and moving to you. Perhaps you think about the person of Jesus of Nazareth and all that he represented in his time, and all that he might still represent to us today. Perhaps the meditations of our hearts this morning can be on what it would be to stand up for love and those on the edge and margins of our society. For Jesus' ministry and life was spent lifting up the struggles of those on the edges. What might healing love look like? What might a ministry of care look like in the 21st century? And how might we lend a hand, a kind word, an act of justice to bring some compassion to those on the edges? Let us give thanks this day for the witness and the ministry of one thousands of years ago, whose example beckons to us still, of what love of neighbor and stranger, homeless and wounded, might look like. For all of this, and for so much more which we've brought into this space of worship this morning, but for which we have no words, we lift our hearts in prayer. Amen. That piece that Braden just played for you always makes me want to cry. It's an African-American spiritual, "Were You There?" And somehow, the fact that the words ask, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord?" really moves me. Because, of course, it was thousands of years ago, so those of us singing it now couldn't have possibly been there. But the song wants to know, were you there? In a spiritual sense. And so when you hear that song, at least for me, there's a moving melancholy to it, especially when you think about the people who wrote the song, an oral tradition song passed on about Easter. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they crucified my Lord? And then this is the part that really gets me. Oh, oh, oh. Sometimes it causes me to tremble, tremble, tremble. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Just that notion that sometimes it causes me to tremble. There's something about Easter that can cause you to tremble if you let it, if you let your guard down, and that song gets my guard down every time. Son of a Unitarian minister, the poet Edward Eslin Cummings, better known as E.E., lowercase to the rest of us, wrote a poem that when I was growing up a Unitarian Universalist was often used on Easter Sunday, and it became one of my favorites for this occasion. He wrote, "I thank you, God, for most this amazing day. For the leaping greenly spirits of trees and the blue true dream of sky and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I who have died am alive again today. And this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and love and wings and of the gay, great happening, illimitably earth. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing, any lifted from the know of all nothing, human merely being, doubt unimaginable you? Now the ears of my ears awake, and now the eyes of my eyes are opened." This morning's second reading comes from the New Testament. As Faye told you during the time with the children, each of the Gospels has a slightly different and nuanced different version of Jesus' death story, of the Easter story. And this morning I'm going to share with you the story as told by St. Mark, the Gospel according to Mark, chapter 15, verses 1 through 5 and 25 through 32, and then a little piece of chapter 16, verses 1 through 8. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him, you say so. Then the chief priests accused him of many things, and Pilate asked him again, have you no answer? See many charges they bring against you. But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. And those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, "Aha! You who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him among themselves and saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now, so that we may see and believe." When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" And when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled back. And as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified, but he has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him, but go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Roll back the stone. Easter is both a challenging and an inspiring holiday for many of us. On the one hand, the Christian story of Jesus' death by crucifixion, his burial and then resurrection 3 days later seems improbable at best. We Unitarian Universalists tend to be followers of the scientific method. And not only that, but we are all grief endurers. And we know from our own life experiences that dead is dead. People we have lost have never come back to life, and the prospect of Jesus having done so through a miracle thousands of years ago feels like so much wishful believing. So what is there then that we can appreciate about the Easter story, even if we don't believe in a literal bodily resurrection? Is there anything to the story that I just shared with you, at least Mark's version, that we can relate to or that resonates with our own life experiences? My colleague at All Souls Church, Reverend Rob Hardies, once delivered a sermon. In fact, he delivered it at the General Assembly of Unitarian Universalists in 2005, entitled "Born Again and Again and Again." In that sermon, one of the things that Rob talked about is the sense that we who have lived, while we have never seen people die and then live again, we have undergone transformations that have felt like death and rebirth. He said that there have been parts of each of us that have died or have ceased to be, and that then we have been reborn, or we have started over, or we have found a new path in life. He bemoaned the fact that we who follow the scientific method, who like to think our way through many things, we who believe in salvation by bibliography, sometimes don't believe that there is power in being born again. That we are sometimes a bit too quick to dismiss those who say they have been born again, simply because we don't believe in the particular brand of born again that they're selling. In fact, so much so, he said in the sermon, that there are bumper stickers now. I don't know if they're around here, but in the States there are now bumper stickers of those who are so annoyed by all these born again bumper stickers that they have stickers that proclaim, born right the first time. My colleague said those bumper stickers miss the point. It's not about being born right or being born wrong, because sadly many people have been told way too many times that they were born wrong. But what it's really about is about being changed, being open and willing to be someone new, someone different from who we were yesterday. It's not about rightness or wrongness. It's about the constancy of growing and learning and unfolding. We are all in the midst of a life that is a process. See, I'm getting better at that. A process. We are all works of art, if you will. We are not done. We are not finished. So whether we were born right, how about born blessed the first time? Born loved the first time. Born loved each time. Maybe it's too much to fit on a bumper sticker. But when you look at the Easter story in depth, you see many elements that we can relate to, I think. Think about the whole story. I just read you a piece of the whole story, but the whole story has friendship and collective work and ministry. It has betrayal and unjust power wielded by authorities. We can't relate to any of this. It has cruelty and it has grief and it has love. So which part of the story draws you in? Or maybe I should say, which part of the story draws you in this year? Because I feel like every time I go back to the story, I feel like I'm a different character in it, or there's a different piece of it that speaks to me. Which person in the story do you feel a connection to? And which aspect of it calls to you this year? This year, as you can tell from the title of this sermon, I found myself drawn to the rock, drawn to the boulder at the front of Jesus' tomb. I was thinking about how much I and we can bury. We can believe that we're done with a certain chapter of our living and we just roll the stone in front and we hope nobody will notice. We've left some old habit or pattern of being behind, we say. We put the stone there years and years ago. We didn't touch it. Nobody else did because we told them to avoid it. And yet, then suddenly we're brought up short. We find ourselves once again at the front of the tomb, facing the boulder that we so carefully put in place to block the way, and we discover it has moved. The challenge that we tried to grow away from has escaped. It's reemerged to let us know that we have more work to do. Or we discover that the boulder we put between ourselves and that difficult lesson must be moved.
that we have to move it away. We have to try again. We will have to roll back the stone in order to seek the greater wholeness that can be found only in confronting the tombs of our lives. I also found myself this year reflecting a lot on the various images of Jesus that I have been offered throughout my life. I was struck by the fact that most of the images that first came into my mind would be what I would say are sanitized versions of Jesus. The image on the wall of my grandparents' church when I was there at their Methodist church growing up sometimes in Sunday school was this nice little beatific image, so clean and kind of rosy and a little bit pastel-y. This white guy with absolutely no Middle Eastern look to him at all, not even a hint of olive in his complexion. He looked so loving and so sweet and so beatific, so clean and neat, and a little too tidy, a little too perfect. In fact, I would say he looked so loving and sweet as to be harmless. The creamy white skin and the impassive expression of the picture. And yet, when I go back every time and I look at the text of what people tell me Jesus' life was actually like, it is a much grittier tale. There are lepers. There are women at the well who've been kicked out. There's dirt in Jesus' fingernails. This man wasn't afraid to face the underbelly of life. It's a struggle of sweat and tears and blood, of resistance and loving witness to the outcast. Jesus, it seems to me, was not afraid to roll up his sleeves and get a little messy in the trenches of life, if you will. His ministry was spent down there with the folks that everybody else told him not to pay any attention to at all. He was someone who spoke out on all of the major social justice issues of his time. So when I think of Jesus, I don't think of that guy that I was presented with that picture of when I was a kid. I think of an art history class, an image that resonates with me much more. When I was in college and I was in Germany studying, we were talking about a painting of Jesus done by a German artist named Matthias Grunewald, a German Renaissance artist whose most famous work is this work. You'll have to Google it when you go home. This is where we need the screen so I could show you what it looks like. He did this altarpiece called the Isenheim altarpiece. It's got these triptychs. It's beautiful. You open it up, it's one set of images. You close the altarpiece, you got a whole other set of images. And Grunewald, the reason this piece of art was something we even talked about, it was amazing. This altarpiece was created between 1506 and 1515, okay? Was because Grunewald, unlike all the classic artists of his time who were painting the beatific Jesuses that I was presented with, he rejected that. He decided that rather than this glorified, angelic, appearing Jesus, he was going to paint a more intense and emotional way. So he included this image of Christ on the cross that actually looked like a person suffering, where his skin looked mottled and almost a little green, where he looked a little bit like maybe he had, I don't know, splinters or something that looked, it looked kind of horrible. It was sort of hard to look at, and yet it looked real. Someone being crucified would not look happy and calm and like nothing was happening to them. And Grunewald rejected all those images and said, this is what it looked like to writhe in pain in this horrible situation. And I try though I often fail to keep that sort of more embodied image of Jesus in mind. I think we need that starker image. It doesn't have to always be a brutal one, but something starker than the Jesus in that little picture that I had growing up as a kid. Because resurrection, we need to see, doesn't come easy. We're told of both the brutality that preceded Jesus' resurrection and of the fear that it stirred in the women who discovered that he was gone. And I think a resurrection may be miraculous, but it's rooted in the work of transformation. We modern people like to think more about things like evolution and natural processes of chrysalises becoming butterflies. And human changes are like that too. They take work. You have to lay a foundation. I think that whatever you think about what happened with Jesus, whether he actually bodily rose and was resurrected, or whether his spirit came back and ministered to people, whatever you believe, you have to believe that his life laid the groundwork for that resurrection. And we human beings, we modern human beings, have to do the same kind of foundation laying. Think of the people you've known, or maybe the person is you who's kicked an addiction, or who's gone through cancer treatments and then moved forward, who's moved through grief and loss, or who has worked hard to undo destructive patterns of behavior in therapy. Resurrections need groundwork to be laid and an openness to change in order to actually take hold. And I tend to think that Jesus was able to pull off resurrection in whatever form you picture it, not just because he was close to God or because he was a holy teacher, but because of all that he had lived. His whole being and ministry had prepared him for the possibility of rolling back the stone and walking into new life. As I thought about this walking into new life, I thought of this meditation that our colleague, the Reverend Victoria Stafford, wrote that's called Walking Toward Morning. She writes, we do it every day. Every morning we go out blinking into the glare of our freedom, into the wilderness of work and the world, making maps as we go, looking for signs that we're on the right path, please. And on some good days, we walk right out of our oppressions, those things that press us down from the outside, or as often from the inside. We shake off the shackles of fear and prejudice, timidity and closed-mindedness, selfishness and self-righteousness, and we claim our freedom outright, terrifying as it is. Our freedom to be human and humane. Every morning, every day, we leave our houses not knowing if it will be for the last time. And we decide what we'll take with us. How much integrity, truth-telling, compassion, arrogance, anger, humor. How much willingness to change and be changed. Every day, she writes, we gather what we think we'll need. We pick up what we love and all that we so far believe. We put on our history, shoulder our experience and memory, and I'm picturing a backpack here. We take inventory of our blessings and we start walking. toward mourning. If resurrection is going to happen, friends, if it already has happened, if you've found new life, if you have died and then been alive again, if you have been, like my colleague suggests, born again and again and again, it's because you've done what Victoria Safford describes. You've shouldered your memories and all that you've brought with you. You've put everything in there along with your lunch kit and everything else. You've also brought everything you've ever known about anything. And you've walked toward morning. And maybe you didn't call that new day resurrection. And maybe you didn't even think it was miraculous. Heck, everybody does it. Everybody, if they're lucky, gets up, wakes up in a new day, and walks out into their lives. But I dare to say on this Easter morning that if I knew each of your stories a little bit, I could see moments of renewal and rebirth, moments of resurrection. So may we this Easter appreciate the transformative possibilities in our lives. May we be grateful for the social justice ministry of Jesus of Nazareth. May we roll back the stone so that we can live lives of integrity and authenticity in spite of how challenging that can sometimes be. Happy Easter. It's about more than bunnies, isn't it? Happy Easter, and blessed be.